Peter Donegan talks to James Basson for the Sideshow Garden Podcast, part one of two.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
James Basson, you're very welcome to sit in the front of my Jeep. I guess most would have expected more luxurious surroundings for our meet interview for the Sideshow, but you're very welcome.
Well, most would, but we have a fantastic view overlooking the sea, and your back of your car is full of plants, so it's not a bad place at all.
How cool is it to be James Basson?
It's very cool to be James Basson. But that's a very uncomfortable place to be. We've done very well, and we've fought a honest fight, and we've done very well for ourselves. And people start to think that that makes us really cool, but actually we're just normal.
We were talking before, I guess I turned on the microphone, and I gave you the analogy of Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah.
And John Travolta walking down the street and knowing that he's the coolest thing ever, only in his head.
Yeah.
But everybody else picks up on that. Do you identify with that?
I always walk a little bit with my head down, so I'm not a strutter. But I was born with a real sense of what I am and what I believe in, and so I've never doubted that, and so I've been able to make things that make sense to me. And it'd be lying to say that I didn't want gold, but I first and foremost want to make something that I really think is amazing.
Do we talk about the elephant in the room? And before I even get into that, do you get a bit sick and tired of talking about that elephant?
Do you mean the elephant being an unpopular garden?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I haven't talked about it much, and I think I had quite a hard time afterwards. My public image was very much, I don't really care. I made it for me, and I made it for what I believed in, and I made it not even really for the sponsor. You know, I really am kind of very self-motivated sort of person, which is not always great. But it did put me into question what is next. I went into quite depression after Chelsea, and I didn't know if it was because it wasn't popular, the garden, but I don't think it was that. I think it was I've done this thing which has kind of been my dream since starting with making gardens, and to achieve, to get to the top of that mountain for me was awesome, and then I didn't really know what was going to come next.
My mom used to say to me, can you not just be like your brother Liam? Can you not just do, you know, walk into the scouts or the school or gardens or whatever it was and just do something without having to draw attention to yourself?
Yeah.
And it's not that I ever made a garden to upset somebody.
Mm.
There's something in brackets in there that I'm unsure what that is. Mm. But essentially it's just a garden, as I always say. Do you, or the James sitting on your shoulder, your third person in a parallel universe, does that James turn around to you and go, oh, James, why did you do it again?
No, I've always left Chelsea, not with that feeling, never again, but always that feeling, I've got to come back, I've got to do it again, I'm hungry to do it again. And leaving this one, I definitely had that feeling, I'm not coming back for a while. But there's a few questions in there, and one of the things that strikes me is, I've always been the person who managed to get a lot of attention without making it look like I was making the effort, but I think I probably do. I mean, I put a lot of plants in that looked shocking, and I really enjoyed stirring the pot. You know, I really enjoyed bringing the RHS judges, which are the kings of horticulture, and I couldn't do what they do. You know, they make perfect gardens, and I could not do that. And I made a very imperfect garden, and I played the game, so I told the judges that I want this to be imperfect. It's supposed to be imperfect, and therefore you have to appreciate imperfection. And I really, really loved the tension between talking to people I respect in our business, and but pulling them in a direction they didn't naturally want to go, and that is into the natural world of imperfect beauty. And so I really did enjoy that attention game, which I played.
I interviewed Stephanie Mann, who I know you know quite well. And for those of you unaware, Stephanie is the editor of the Society of Garden Designers, Garden Design, the SGD Journal magazine, I think is the correct title on it. And for those of you listening at home, here's what Stephanie had to say. We'll just play this little clip.
When I spoke to the Bassons about their garden, and it was only a few weeks ago that I was talking to them about it to see, now the dust has settled, how they felt about the whole thing. And what they said to me was, I said, like, did you expect it to be the way it was? And they said, yes, we did. We knew that there would be a reaction. But I don't think they expected, if, you know, they didn't tell me this, but I mean, who could be okay with, you know, with their work being compared to a graveyard, being called ugly? You know, I mean, James doesn't have a particular problem with the word ugly because he thinks that we have an issue as a culture with what the idea of beautiful is. And so I think he'd be okay with that. But some of the things that were being said in the mainstream press, not even the garden press, they must have really hurt their feelings. But, you know, they would never admit to that. They say that they totally understand. They were expecting this kind of reaction. They knew that people would say that it wasn't a garden. And actually, they would point out that it really was a garden because it had, you know, a lovely table and chairs, it had paths through it, it had a swimming pool. It got to be both a landscape and a garden. But it must be incredibly hard. I don't think I've ever come across any kind of, in my professional life, anything that would be as challenging as having to lay your work out in that way in front of so many thousands of people, or millions of people even on the TV, and have people say whatever they like about it. I mean, it must be incredibly hard.
I don't think if you're going to make a good garden, everyone should like it. And in fact, if you make a really, really good garden, maybe more people not liking it than liking it is really pushing the business we're in. And so I was kind of proud to upset a lot of people.
Do you mean that when, let's say, the Beatles did, and I know I'm decent with the music analogies, but when the Beatles did Love Me Do, it's hard to turn around and be critical of it because essentially it was the first one out. Yeah. But when they did the White Album and you get the whole number 9 thing going on,
yeah,
I can understand why people who bought the Love Me Do vinyl turned around and went, what are they playing at? Even Sgt. Pepper's was heading towards that point. Are you a little bit that if one person loves that song and that person doesn't like the next song but they like the song after that, does that identify with you? Or is it just a case of, look, there's a happy place in James's head, this is what's in James's head, we're going to make this, and if you like it, that's great, and if you don't, that's fine?
Yeah, I think it's the second one. You know, I don't think I'm reacting to try and shock, but I am just very I am a complete passionado for nature and wilderness and natural landscape. And to be able to put that, so James's happy place in Chelsea, you know, surrounded by high horticulture and high art of gardens, it was just a real personal feat and personal success.
I spoke to you again before we went on air about lonely places in Peterhead.
Yeah.
For gardens that I had made where,
yeah,
I guess, and again, I say in my head, it's not so much in reality, it really felt like the loneliest place in the planet. And then you come out with that classic hit all over again. You do that garden that everybody likes, and all of a sudden you're en vogue, you're Madonna, you're the Beastie Boys with the right album. Have you had those lonely places?
No, not really.
Wow.
I'm a bit of a, I lack empathy. I'm not a, I have a strange character. I enjoy people, I love being with people, but I also have a sort of lack of empathy. So, and that puts me in a place where I sort of got, you know, depressed about it, but I think I was more depressed about what's next. And as soon as I went back out into the landscape and felt that landscape again, I was, you know, back at home. It probably is a lonely place, but I really like being there.
Yeah. What were you doing when you were growing up? Like, when, you know, and I know there's Sideshow Bingo, which is Peter used to grow plants under his bed. And I think I said this to Kate Gold, that I remember my mom standing at the back door looking out to the back garden, and people had called around, like we'd visitors, inverted commas, and them saying, "What's Peter doing down the back of the garden?" And my mom would go, "Leave him there. He's happy.
He's happy.
He's happy." And it was just me and my own talking to the plants. Were you one of them?
I was, but I'm not a gardener. And I don't have that itch. I don't grow plants. I don't water plants. If they die in front of me, I have no empathy. So I don't do it. I don't look after them. But I am, I was always off on my own up a tree. Generally, most times up a tree. Or in the woods making camps, disappearing until tea time, completely gone into the wild lands. That was where I had to be.
What was the first garden that you ever did, number one? And number two, do you look back on that and go, "Oh, James, that was so sh-"?
I made the first garden we ever did, the first, do you mean show garden or real garden?
Any garden.
Well, I think show gardens. Yes, the first show garden was the Gardening Witch magazine garden for Hampton Court 2000. And I really loved that job. I loved the garden. It was fantastic. It was a real community. It was a community garden. But the real first one I really kind of anchor myself to was our first one at Chelsea in 2012. And it was recreating a pudding landscape, a particular kind of rock structure and all the vegetation that grew in it. And it's probably my favorite garden. The first time just stood out and said, "This is what I'm about, and it's not like anyone else, it's what we do." And so super proud. I look back at that and think it was brilliant. There's some things that potentially you could do better now, but generally no, it was brilliant. Really proud.
What was the first garden, just any garden that you've ever done? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
What was that?
My first garden was for a lawyer, and I made two mistakes. One was I thought I could do it from seed initially in the ground, and I had 10% success rate, which wasn't huge. And two was, I said it was going to be a no maintenance garden, and now we all know there's no such thing as a no maintenance garden. Yeah, but it's wild and it's magic, and I still think it's one of my best because I was free from a lot of constraints that professional life brings you.
I mean, in my case, I did my first garden at something like 9 or 10 years of age, and that was because I was goofing around with plants, and somebody turned around and said, "Would you do something with our garden?" We got it professionally done, inverted commas, but that's 1980s Ireland when Cliff Richard was singing, "We're all going on a summer holiday," and everybody thought that was rock and roll, so that doesn't really count. But in your case, I'm gathering the lawyer didn't knock on your door and just go, "Excuse me, do you make gardens? Can I give you a job?" There had to be a lead up to that point for you to get that call, I gather. What was that?
Well, I came into it really late. I wasn't born gardening, and I did fine art painting and then did garden design degree. And knocked on a few doors, friends of family, and these people were Scottish. And they thought, well, this is a young designer who's really keen, really excited, really wants to make a go of it. We'll give him a chance, which was huge, but there wasn't much money behind it. So it was a real challenge. But it really was my first garden. It was the big first real thing I made.
When you wake up in the morning, what's an average day? Do you go downstairs, draw gardens? I mean, outside of the showmanship, which I would describe as basically Elvis on stage in Vegas, and that is what it is. It's a show.
Yeah.
When you're not doing that, how does the business work, and what is that? And do you do, I can't say normal gardens, or can I say normal gardens? What is the business that is not Chelsea and being at the top of the podium?
Yeah, it's the top of the podium thing that sort of bothers me. I mean, I'm lucky to have done really, really well. But back at home, we're just normal gardeners making a lot of mistakes, you know. I think the practice, my everyday is I do a lot of driving. Our jobs are long, you know, quite well spread apart, 4 hours drive between jobs, sort of jobs. And but I can't help myself being experimental. I'm constantly planting 30 species I don't know. So I'm constantly, all my clients are my guinea pigs. And Chelsea's helped me. The podium has helped me helped my clients have confidence in my abilities to experiment in their gardens. So my real work is experimental, and it has lots of failures and lots of successes, and I try and learn from both.
If you're listening to this and you don't know who James is, which is, you know, that's okay. he's laughing, but put it into Google Chelsea 2017 or just James Basson Gardens, and you'll get an idea of what is consistently different. Do I call it that?
Yeah, I'd hope it would be different. I think one of the criticisms of Chelsea was, and I came at a really good time because the public were complaining. Generally, do complain, but the public complaining that every Chelsea was the same, because Chelsea fell into this sort of trap of people designing gardens for a formula. And so I came along at a time making something a little bit different, and it was really celebrated and encouraged. So I was sort of, I didn't have to be too controversial. I was kind of the accepted, people wanted something new, and I came along just at that time.
Well, let's go a different way then, because I always say that a garden essentially is just a garden. You can turn around and say, well, I don't like it, or I hate it, or I really can't stand it, or I think it's absolutely terrible. But at the same token, it's still just a garden. Mm. And gardening is never really that controversial. I mean, the only thing I think about gardening is, and I think I said this before in an interview in the States with my friend Matt, that whoever invented the Hebe rakiensis shouldn't be allowed to vote.
Yeah.
Most boring plant on the planet.
Most boring plant. Yeah, I am.
Hold on. I've got a phone call. No, that's okay. I should have put this on mute. Hold on a second. Yeah, I'll just throw it underneath the seat. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't really like gardens. So
That makes absolute perfect sense, James.
Yeah.
It?
Yeah. Yeah. So I spend my life making gardens, but I'm not into gardens. I think potentially that's what's helped me have a different perspective. Also, I live in France, so I don't live in the kind of garden fraternity. And so I have my own point of reference, and I'm not really making gardens, I'm making landscapes.
When people phone you, and do they have an expectancy that we're going to get a statement? I mean, if Peter Donegan phoned you to design my I can't say garden now, but my landscape, yeah, okay, I've got a nod of approval on that. That person phone you with an expectancy that we have no idea what we're going to get, but because it's James Basson, we're going to love it. It's like a Jimmy Shoes. Isn't that the guy who does shoes? Yeah. So, there's an element of it's high fashion. I don't know anything about fashion, so I'm open to correction on this. That's such on Twitter. You can slag me off. Do you get what I'm saying? It doesn't matter what he does. There's an element of the Emperor's New Clothes, but it's actually real in this case. It's always going to be amazing, irrespective of, because James did it.
It's a definite, the Chelsea and all the show gardens bring a certain amount of renommee, which means that people are confident that you're going to produce something really good, and it allows you to do things that are maybe risky and, you know, taking risks. And my real thing is working in very hard climate. So in this Mediterranean, it's very hard if you don't irrigate, and I don't like to work with any soil, and I work with plants you can't see for 3 months of the year. So most of my clients feel like they've just bought the Emperor's New Clothes when I finish their garden. And without having done Chelsea, I would have had a lot of lawsuits against me. So without that, I was a very frustrated person, because I was asked to make lawns and rose beds and borders and all those things that make gardens. But it was totally uninteresting to me. So I had to do it because I have three young children. But without Chelsea, without the shows, I wasn't able to really produce work that I was satisfied with. And my clients are generally happy after about 3 months. And after 3 years, often not very happy. A lot of what we've been doing is extremely complicated. And we've just had this conference with the GLDA, and it's all about the maintenance after. And we're going to slow down our garden design business and do more and more maintenance management, because I don't think there's room for as many garden designers as we're making. You know, we're turning out thousands a year, and there's not thousands and thousands of new gardens a year, but there's a huge amount of gardens that need proper management. And if you want to make a good garden, it's going to take not one great idea. It's going to take 10 years of great ideas to make something really good.
I've always said that I'm Peter Plants Under His Bed, that pain in the ass, inquisitive mind who kept on asking why. Not why did the plant lean towards light, but why does a plant react to the light? What is that stimulus? What's happening in the plant cell? I mean, it really was an annoying pain in the ass with so many questions that my dad and mom just couldn't answer as non-gardeners and definitely not into gardening at all. And I find and feel that I'm quite privileged to get to do what I do for a living, as in what I love doing is my hobby, which is my job,
we're very lucky.
I'm quite privileged. And at the same token, I speak to some of the garden designers and I know they've got other jobs outside of, they're not necessarily horticulture or they're working for somebody else, but they're having to wear a lot of different hats to try and make the 7 days a week or the 5 days a week, 8 days a week if you're a Beatles fan, to make it all happen. You're at it full time. Do you scratch your head, you know, look in the mirror and say, Jesus, James, you're James Besson? Do you get those moments?
I sort of get a quiet satisfaction out of having proved myself. You know, I wasn't very good at school. And
How bad were you?
I worked really, really hard, and I was always second last. So, not great. But so I did have something to prove, you know, and so I do have a huge sense of satisfaction out of achieving what we've so far achieved. But I am, I'm not a real muso, and I'm not, don't think myself much of a rock god, and I know I make more mistakes than I make great decisions in gardens, and so I've got a lot to learn, but that is our business. You know, it's very complicated, and I love that, and I love the fact that we're learning every day, and it's a very humbling business. I don't think anyone should be very arrogant in our world, because it's a complicated job, and that's what I love.
Pop quiz round. What's your favourite drink?
My favourite drink?
Yeah.
Oh, probably a glass of red wine.
Not a pint of Guinness, no?
Not a pint of Guinness. A pint of Guinness is good, but there's something mellow about a glass of red wine.
Okay, I'll give you that. All right, okay, hold on a sec. Now I've got, because you're living in France, so this is probably really stereotypical. You asked the Irishman about Guinness and asked the Frenchman about red wine, but if I said to you, we can have a bottle of X, what would that be?
I'm not a real connoisseur about red wine, but I do like the Varois wines, which is the Var region just outside the Alpes-Maritimes. It's a real kind of muddy, earthy, not too expensive, minerally wine. It's not the high Bordeaux or the Bourgognes. It's a real simple wine, and I enjoy that.
I think I said something to Kate Gold about she put up a photograph of a bachelor Jackie Monty and the skin was peeling off it, and I just wrote Le Jacques. Yeah. And she came back with something in French, and I just remember going, that's three more words than I... all I know is Ouai le Poubelle, and then I was corrected saying, no, it's Ouai le Poubelle, and apparently there's some difference, which I don't even know what they are anymore.
Yeah. Well, Poubelle is more beautiful than Poubelle is what you stick your trash into, so...
There's a dog barking in the background. That's all right. What's downtime for you? I mean, are you Sunday morning, get up, watch reruns of the A-Team... wear an I Shot JR t-shirt. Let's call it a Sunday morning, because I don't really have Sunday mornings.
I'm quite into my weekends, actually. I'd like to try and get home. I travel a lot at the moment, but I can't sleep in the mornings. So I generally wake up 2 or 3 in the morning and wait for my alarm to go off at 6. Then I get out of bed and head up the mountain. I live in an amazing part of the world, and I try and find a spot to walk in. If I can get one of the kids out of bed, they come with me. Otherwise, I take the dog and I disappear into the hills and try and get back before lunchtime.
This is not a ridiculous question. I genuinely mean this. And as most of you are well aware, contrary to what has been written about the Sideshow, I actually don't do any research, and I haven't for this one either, in case you haven't gathered. But when you go off up into the hills, do you sit on a rock and have a moment looking into the clouds and say, well, almost like meditation? Or is it, no, Peter, just go for a walk and that's grand?
No, I like painting, so if I can, I stop. But I'm one of those classic frustrated men that if I see a hill, I get to the top. So it's a bit of a hack normally. I'm normally out of breath by the time I get to the top. The dog's spinning circles around me as I'm panting. And once I get there, I generally have to sit down because I'm a bit dizzy, because it's very steep around our part of the world. And I try and get lost, which is very easy for me because I have no sense of direction. And I disappear into some new part of the landscape around us and learn about that piece of landscape by just trying to find my way home.
What was the last piece of music you bought?
Niels Fram. I'm big into Niels Fram at the moment. I can't remember the name of the album, but it's sort of this electronic, classical, computer-generated music. And it's kind of got this droney, repetitive, urban quality, which I really enjoy and helps me concentrate.
Really? Is that a little bit like early Daft Punk or something like that, is it?
I don't know if it's early. I mean, it's much, you know, he's still going now. I'm infamous in my family for listening to high wire music, which was done by a musician in Australia recording the wind in the wires of telephone pylons. I'm really into drone and sort of natural sound in a very electronic, manipulated fashion.
I've got a picture of you sitting in some French jazz, I'm going to say a French word, bourgeois. I don't even know what bourgeois is, but let's run with that nightclub that at 4 o'clock in the morning while somebody's playing free jazz and you're just sitting in the corner smoking a Galois, having a glass of red wine, saying, isn't this amazing, with a beret slightly sideways on you? But that's probably quite reticent of the Family Guy impression of what Ireland is. And when the plane lands, it's just the whole runway is filled with bottles. Yeah. So I apologise for that, but I paint that very stereotypical picture, but is there a slight appreciation for almost everything that is a little bit obscure, or are there mainstream things that you do like?
There's a lot of mainstream stuff I like too, and I'm not that cool, so I don't sit in bars smoking Gauloises with a berry over my head. I'm just not very cool.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. But no, I'm a bit more of a geek and a bit more of a nerd and a bit more of a swot, really. You know, I'm definitely, that's where I come from.
I place Peter into this, so I'm not slagging you off, but I can't remember who I said this to. I remember sitting in the playground on my own when I was about 8 years of age, and I had a cactus in my school bag. Mm. And I used to just sit on my own and like look into my bag at the plants. And I was into the Rolling Stones and the Doors and Led Zepp, so I had slightly longer hair when everybody else was bowler haircut, is what we call it, which was your mother cut it for you in a fringe Beatles. Yeah. Beatles haircut is the polite, eloquent way to put it, but essentially I was that geek on my own. Were you one of them?
No, I was kind of the kid who got on with everyone, and I was a nice guy, and nothing very cool about all that. I think the only thing that I remember, that sort of solo thing, was I was big into night walking. I went to a boarding school, and I used to break out and disappear into night. And that's probably that solace thing that I get still was taking those walks.
I think Anne-Marie Powell said something to me that she used to do that thing in boarding school. I need to check that, the 2017 interview with Anne-Marie Powell, but that I'm aware. I think she told me that she used to throw the sheets, you know, in knots you might do in a prison break. Were you one of them?
No, Anne-Marie Powell's a very naughty girl. I was a very good boy.
do you know Anne-Marie well?
How could you not know her? You know, if you're in this business and you haven't met Anne-Marie Powell, you're a very unlucky person.
And that is it. We are all but out of time for this part one of two with James. My huge thanks to Helen Basson, who helped me behind the scenes to try and make it all happen with James. It's really very much appreciated, Helen. And also thanks you for listening and your love and support over the last couple of weeks. That sounds a little bit silly, but for a guy who doesn't really have a whole lot of a life, I was going to say, outside of things that photosynthesize, it matters when you say, hey, how you doing? I like that. Be it on something as simple as Twitter or Facebook, or even just leaving it a rate and review in iTunes. We'll be back with a different guest next week. And then the week after is part two, the finale with James. That's it. Take care. Enjoy. Go do some garden work in the great outdoors. And don't forget to give your mother a hug. All right. Take care. Cheers all. Bye.